Hello, and welcome to Jolly's Spring 2015 podcast series. This is Jen Whitley, the Communications Co-Editor of the Journal of Language and Literacy Education, a peer-reviewed, open-access journal housed in the Department of Language and Literacy Education at the University of Georgia. Today, I'll be speaking with John Wargo of Michigan State University about his piece titled Spatial Stories with Nomadic Narrators, Affect, Snapchat, and Feeling Embodiment in Youth Mobile Composing.
Well, first, John, I wanted to thank you for being here today and willing to provide this multimodal feature to Jolly's audience. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
The first question I have is just a basic question that I'm sure our listeners would be interested to know the answer to. And that question is, what motivated you to write this article?
Yeah, so as I wrote in the piece, Ben was a really telling case and a little bit of an unusual participant when it came to his use of Snapchat. He was just someone who used it in really elaborate and, I thought, really sophisticated ways. But as a language and literacy educator, I far too often see schools and districts mandate their students to put away or disconnect from the local knowledges of mobile media and of their phones in particular. And even when the school has a tech-centered focus, there's unease about young people and their phones. But Ben, as readers will see in the article, uses the affordances of the application in Snapchat to construct and compose narratives that are layered, narratives that are persuasive, effectively textured, and rhizomatic. And I wanted to highlight how as educators we can learn from the spatial stories young people are telling through new media narratives, and how we may need a new paradigm for thinking about digital technologies in school. And it's not just about, you know, integrating technology, but rather making technology visible, even if that visibility, you know, comes with an unease with mobile apps like Snapchat.
Great. You're definitely speaking to some of the issues our readers, especially those in the classroom, are facing today. And with that thought in mind, what challenges did you encounter as you conducted your research? And what advice would you give to people who are doing the same kind of research or maybe the same type of activities in their classroom in either avoiding or resolving challenges of this sort?
Yeah. So, you know, as I discussed this piece of data with colleagues, committee members, Ben, and teachers, even when thinking about Snapchat, there was something inauthentic about me collecting something that is inherently ephemeral. You know, Ben sort of talks about one of the affordances of Snapchat is that it goes away, it disappears. But these Snap stories that disappear after 24 hours, you know, also have a lot to tell us when it comes to composing narrative or thinking about, you know, storying as it is. And so I felt okay with Ben's permission to keep it and analyze it alongside of him. And as I worked and learned alongside of Ben, we really became sort of co-researchers in exploring how would we sort of capture and analyze and tell the particulars of his story. So I'm thinking about, you know, fortunately things like QuickTime, ChronoViz, and iReflector were tools that I used to both collect the larger Snap story as well as break and scrape it into particular frames, or as I label in the article, spatial stories. And I think if others, you know, teachers, researchers, anyone really is interested in doing this type of connective ethnographic research, where you truly are sort of a participant observer across both virtual and more, you know, IRL in real life or corporeal context, then I think that we sort of have to pursue a flea market methodology or what Halberstam would call like a scavenger theory. And I feel like in that way, I really had to flex my own sort of qualitative research muscles here to begin to nuance the stories and overlapping narratives. But I think that, you know, these tools like QuickTime, ChronoViz, you know, these are tools that not only sort of permeate me as a researcher, but also permeate my classroom space too as a teacher and a teacher educator. And so I would sort of want to say that we should encourage that type of work to also happen in those classroom spaces.
Great. And you actually already started to address our next question in talking about how you had to rethink and reconceive some of the issues that came up during your research, not only as the researcher, but also as, in a way, a co-participant. So for our next question, in what ways did your study challenge you to rethink and reconcile the theories that you called upon to frame this research?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think, you know, for those of us who do work with mobile media, I think there's a large push against studies and research that understands and even reifies technology as something done solely behind the screen. And rather for me, Ben's story was this exemplar of understanding how a young person choreographs issues of history and history, identities, and composing with and through technology. In the larger piece, I put forth a heuristic perspective that I'm calling elastic literacy that looks across three paths of complementarity, as Kress would call it. So what is a path of complementarity? Well, sort of Kress details these as analytical vantage points that allow us to see things that at first glance may seem incommensurable. These may be epistemologies or, you know, as language and literacy researchers, theoretical lenses that don't necessarily privilege all the types of meaning-making that are occurring. So elastic literacy takes literacy as rhizomatic and literacies as rhizomatic. And the first path for this particular piece of data and for Ben's story in general really works to understand the activity. And in our case, a young person working with and mediated through the application Snapchat. The second path that I introduced and what sort of was brought to fruition through Ben's story is space-time, a construct that views sort of the thrown togetherness of space and place and charts how temporality or time actually reconfigures our own understandings of context in these types of narratives. And the third path is sort of this diagonal that cuts across the previous two, and that's sort of affect and affective intensities. And we really began to see this with Ben's older sister in the piece, Lizette. And so for me, elastic literacies allows me to sort of stretch my own imagination, both in how I represent data, but also what I'm allowed to say about it. And so here in this piece, it's meant to be suggestive and not yet fully integrated, as I'm still really thinking about and figuring out what and how we can chart these moments of curation and creation across time, across years, really. You know, I spent 3 years with Ben, and this was literally one moment, 2 hours of that much larger study. But for now, sort of elastic literacies has allowed me to play. It's allowed me to improvise a little bit and really to move beyond sort of pure forms of representation in the way that typical studies of writing with new media sort of reify in some ways.
Great. And lastly, and especially considering the newness and innovation of this type of research, it's just on the market, it seems like. what questions were raised by your piece?
Yeah, I think, like I said, as I sit here and reflect back on the 30 months of fieldwork that I did with these young people, and this particular snippet of data in particular, I'm really, really interested in the haptic project of composing with new media. And so I'm just thinking about, like, you know, as our own lives become increasingly mediated by digital technologies and the everyday geographies we traverse through become more hybrid, I think there's a lot of next steps and questions that arise with this type of work. And so some of those are, you know, for example, how do our technologies touch back? You know, we see Ben swipe, click, tap, et cetera, with his iPhone, but the soft power of the application of Snapchat is in many ways touches Ben back. And this isn't just for, you know, adolescents, but I see it with early childhood as well. You know, many of my participants had younger siblings that I sort of encountered in the field. And I was, you know, captivated by how influenced they were by sort of understandings of mediated multimodality. And here in particular, I'm thinking about Crayola's Color Alive series as but one example of that, where youth and young people are coloring in coloring books, but their iPad brings their coloring to life and actually are, you know, encouraged to jump in the frame with the image that they colored and began to tell narratives with tablets and iPads. I just think that that's really, really interesting. I'm also really interested in asking questions about the ways youth and adolescents in particular reauthor selves and create collaborative social worlds through writing with mobile media. And thinking about how are they doing this in larger projects concerning civic engagement, in acts of resistance and activism. And just a closing thought, I think it's necessary that we need to look outside the classroom walls for more meaningful, multimodal, and media-rich writing. And I also think new questions would emerge if we looked beyond the one-site, one-study trend. And, you know, I'm guilty of this in myself, is that, like, yes, this article, you know, charts the particulars of Ben and his use of Snapchat in one day, but what would it look like if we considered Ben's use of this application with the other particulars of his sort of network literacy, such as Twitter or his, you know, his work with Tumblr or the blogging he did on Reddit? I think that that's the type of sort of work that needs to be done so that we can better understand the connective literacy lives of young people.
Great. Well, it definitely sounds like you're passionate about this work, and I think that what you have to say here today is definitely going to help our readers. So thank you again for being willing to be here for our readers and for being with me today.
Yeah, no, thank you for the opportunity. It's been wonderful.
Listeners, please continue the dialogue began here by engaging in John's piece in our spring 2015 issue.